Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It's easy to do, and I think you'll like it. If you don't, it's easier to unsubscribe than it is to subscribe. You even get to do it yourself. You don't even have to go through us. We have the technology designed so that you can actually take yourself off our list if you decide that you want to leave us. And again, I'll remind you about our very strict privacy policy. Whatever you give us, stays with us. We don't sell it or rent it or loan it to anybody else. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. They also have a strict privacy policy. Right, Joan?
Absolutely.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I was in D.C. over the weekend, as you know, Joan.
Yes.
And I saw something that I don't think has happened in a while. The Cherry
what?
Blossom Festival happened on Saturday, began on Saturday.
Began, yeah.
At which time there were actually cherry blossoms out.
Well, and I'm going to make you feel even better about being there because you got the best days of the cherry blossom.
Really?
Since then, it's been cold and or rainy. Now, the Cherry Blossom Parade, which sort of wraps everything up, is this Saturday, and that's when the blooms are supposed to be at their peak, but we're being told by meteorologists that with all this heavy rain, they'll probably be gone by the time we have the parade.
Well, the kite flying event, which kind of launches the thing on Saturday morning, was delayed because of rain Saturday morning. But other than that, it was a wonderful weekend. But you know, I just remember how many years you and I have complained that the cherry blossoms bloomed 2 or 3 weeks before the festival.
Right. We usually get this warm period, and it kind of happened this year. You know, the cherry blossoms kind of ended at the beginning of the festival, which I guess is the best we could hope for, because usually they're completely gone by the time the festival comes.
But on Sunday, when I flew out, the tidal pool was covered with beautiful cherry blossoms.
Oh boy!
And all the different kinds. It turned out the alignment of the festival and the blossoms were better this year than it seems to me that has been the last.
And, a little better, yes.
Yeah. So that was a good thing. It was it's a beautiful time to be in our nation's capital, folks. Speaking of our nation's capital, Joan, let's talk about what's on the White House agenda. They're trying to patch up things with Europe a little bit, aren't they?
Well, they sure are, and there's a lot that's I guess problematic about this relationship, and this goes way beyond. I mean, certainly a lot of the roots of these problems are centered around the whole invasion of Iraq, but it certainly goes beyond that.
It precedes the Iraqi situation because of some of the issues that we've had with regard to trade, with regard to the produce that we send over. The Europeans don't like any kind of genetically altered corn or
right.
Or
and now they're worried
like
about
that.
Our cows.
Yeah, now that we're although they're the ones who gave us the mad cow. Our little scare we now know came from Canada, which then ultimately came from England. But anyway, the it's interesting to me though, Joan. You know, the same people who didn't like the way Americans who liked the way Americans were brave and bold and would stand up for a weaker buddy back 60 years ago. Are not so excited about that trade in us right now, are they?
Well, you know, Europe is certainly a much different place than it was back then. And as you know, and as everyone knows, it really fragmented over the issue of Iraq, mm-hmm. with, different countries taking, polar opposite stands on whether the invasion was a good thing or a bad thing.
And, Joan, we're now finding out, as I think you know, that's coming to light why some of those nations, some of the leaders of some of those nations were not in favor of the Iraqi invasion and the downfall of Saddam. It's now coming to light that some of them had ulterior motives that were not associated with leadership because of the oil for food program, the mismanagement of that.
Right. And That's a huge issue that really hasn't come to light enough, I think.
And it will, because they are looking into
sure.
The UN is looking into that. But I do think that some of the motives of Mr. Chirac and some others are going to be called into question very soon. But be that as it may, there are plenty of other things that the U.S. and Europe have been a little testy about, and one of them has been with some of the trade issues. And one of the things I know you've been tracking, Joan, is the tax breaks that U.S. exporters have been getting from the U.S. that the Europeans haven't been happy about.
That's right. And the U.S. would argue that that tax break was really just leveling the playing field. But mm-hmm. Europe has strongly disagreed and actually went to the World Trade Organization, I believe it was last year, and received the authority to start levying heavy tariffs on imports of U.S. goods.
Right.
Now, what's happening is that was supposed to put pressure on the U.S. to end this regime and change the tax system. And Congress, true to form, has been having trouble deciding how to end this regime. So we have gone beyond this sort of arbitrary deadline that the Europeans had set of December 31st, and then we even blew through the real deadline of March 1st when they began levying these fines. And it remains to be seen how long it will really take for us to change this regime.
Well, I'm sure Congress is not exactly excited about changing these tax advantages for U.S. exporters, because anything that they do could further hurt U.S. jobs, couldn't it?
Well, exactly. And there's a real split in Congress, even among the GOP in the House, particularly about how to make this happen. Do you just give a tax break to domestic manufacturing? Do you give a tax break across the board to all corporations? Do you limit it to certain industries? What about small businesses? And, you know, the rank-and-file members, particularly in the House, are not in lockstep behind the leadership on this, and that's part of the reason that they're having difficulty. And frankly, the business community is not speaking with one voice. So that lobbying voice, when it gets across to Congress, you know, that's fractured too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not getting a clear direction on how they need to proceed. And frankly, the businesses that enjoy the benefits of the current tax regime, they'd be just as happy to see this whole movement fail so they could continue to enjoy these tax advantages.
Right, exactly. And also, Joan, there, you know, more and more small business owners are part of the export component of our economy. And I just wonder how much I'm not sure I understand. In fact, I don't understand how small businesses have an opportunity to benefit from those tax advantages. Do you know about
that?
Well,
interesting, because someone from the National Association of Manufacturers told me something the other day, and I'll hold off on that,
because I want you to talk about that. Another thing that happened,
leave
folks,
the listeners
in
suspense.
In the last 2 weeks is that the European Union courts have fired a shot across one of our company's bows, and we'll talk about that right after these messages. It's 20 after. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. If you have a question or a comment, here's the email address, askjim@jbsba.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, we caught you at a point where you had a little bit of a cliffhanger there. Remind us about what you were about to say.
The poor listeners had to sit through the commercials and wait.
Poor things.
Now, it was just interesting to me that when I was talking to someone from the National Association of Manufacturers the other day, she said that it doesn't matter what size company you are. If you're a corporation, you probably have some kind of foreign income.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very interesting. Now, I realized that when you become a corporation, you're not a sole proprietorship. You're not a tiny, tiny company. But corporations can be relatively small. And
I have a very small corporation.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible to be small and be involved, and we've talked so much about the global village. It's I guess for a lot of industries, it's hard not to be not to have foreign income. But the other point I wanted to make in terms of the politics of this whole issue, toward the end of last year, Congress was trying to move forward on this legislation, and there was a point where one of those European guys, one of those European EU ministers, came over
right.
and pretty much read Congress the Riot Act.
Mm-hmm.
had meetings with, and I apologize, I don't remember his name, but I remember he had meetings with several congressional leaders, and it always, since then, it has seemed to me, since he left, that many members got their backs up and didn't like being pushed around by this person from overseas.
You
and
mean
I
the way, you mean, think, the, you mean as opposed to the way Europeans like for Americans to come over and tell them how to run their business?
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's kind of like that, wasn't it?
I mean,
you know,
I
we,
just
we all know how gracious Europeans are when we come over and tell them how great Americans are.
But I almost wonder if things might have gone more smoothly. It just seemed there seemed to be an opening toward the end of last year to get this passed, and it almost seemed as if the threats and throwing his weight around kind of poisoned the well a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll never know.
And now we have another episode, which we talked about earlier in the week with our buddy Jonathan Zook, who actually has testified in Brussels before the European Union court system over there, with regard to the charge that the European Union has brought against Microsoft and fined them $613 million and is requiring them to do certain things. So, and I asked Jonathan, I said, Jonathan, how much do you think this case against Microsoft and the judgment against Microsoft was affected by the deterioration recently in the relationship with Europe and America? He said, I think it has something to do with it.
Wow. That's very interesting.
Of course, the case has been going on a long time, long before Iraq. It's not like it just popped up. But he said he thought, you know, ultimately that there was some element of the recent situation with Europe and America, that some element of that did impact the finding.
I'm also wondering what you think about this. In terms of Microsoft's ability to sort of play nice and get along with others, you know, it's not well known for doing that.
Right.
But there has been a lot of criticism of Microsoft domestically for waiting until it was too late to try to make nice with Congress and lobby and sort of make their views understood among politicians. And I wonder if the same has been true in Europe as well.
I don't know the answer to that, but my instinct tells me, based on, as you know, I covered the Microsoft case quite extensively in the USB Microsoft case, and based on what I saw and what I heard and what was reported on this show, I would say that, you know, unless they just completely changed their stripes, they probably were as ham-fisted over there as they were over here.
Right. Boy, ham-fisted, I like that term.
Sort of tin-eared when it comes to work, as you said, to use your example, working and playing well with others.
Right, right.
And, you know, the thing about Microsoft, though, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this anymore, but the thing is Microsoft is a, you know, if you take the universe of technology and you put and you say that it's a room this big, well, let's say that's your living room. Microsoft has become like, a bull in a 2,000-pound bull in that living room, and every time they make a turn, every time they swing their head, they hit somebody.
Right.
You know, and so they can say I'm sorry all they want. They can be so sorry for hitting somebody, or maybe they did it whether they did it intentionally or not, and it's still somebody gets hurt. And when you're that big, when you have 94% of the operating system market, then that's huge, and you're going to every action that you do has an equal and opposite reaction.
That's right. Big about. Ripple effects.
Yeah.
That's true.
So anyway, that's an interesting thing that's going on right now. And the overall thing, though, Joan, it seems to me is that there are some great differences between the U.S. and Europe right now. Where our economy is growing, their economy is still lagging, isn't it?
Well, that's one of the problems, although another interesting thing going on, as you've pointed out many times, is what's going on with the currency.
Yep.
And how the euro is strengthening against the dollar.
Mm-hmm. And which they wanted to happen, but it's actually now becoming a little bit of their own undoing, isn't it?
That's right. It's kind of ironic.
Because the euro is strengthening, the dollar is weakening, and so that's hurting them a little bit. But the interesting thing about, to me, Joan, about the European situation in America is I really believe that there's a level of jealousy that's out there, and for a lot of different reasons, from
military,
economically, and that's the old green monster is raising its ugly head a little bit, in some of these things. Quick break, 29 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. And this show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
It's your chance to wake up and plan another break.
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back at 34 after the hour. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, don't forget to check out their website. I tell you about the website, the Kiplinger website, which is KIPLINGER.com, Kiplinger.com. I tell you about that because I think it's a good place for you to go to get some good information. You can get a little bit more of information about what Joan and I talk about, and you can get it there anytime you want it, day or night. And also, it's a good place to go to subscribe to their letters and their publications, which by the way, if I'm not mistaken, Joan, there's still a 30-day free trial.
Oh, the old Blassingame free trial,
right.
You mean?
I negotiated hard for that, folks. So go there and check them out, and don't forget, you know, they've got the letter Joan and I work out of is the Kiplinger letter, which is 80 in its 81st year now, and that comes every week on Friday. It's emailed or mailed to you. Email, if you get it by email, you get it on Friday. If they mail it, you get it on Monday. And then they've got the biweekly letters, the tax letter, the California letter, and the agriculture letter. I almost forgot that one, Joan. And then there's a magazine, too, right? The Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine?
Absolutely.
Used to be Changing Times. It's been around. I think it's in like its 55th year, isn't it? Something like that.
It's getting old, too.
I think it's almost as old as I am. And so, and you can get that, too, at newsstands as well. And, Joan, there's probably a phone number they can call, isn't there?
Well, I would think so. You should try our toll-free number, which is 800-544-0155.
Check them out, folks. I think you'll enjoy getting to know Kiplinger online, especially, and the publications. I think you'll enjoy those, and I know I have, because I've been a subscriber for a long, long time. When I read Kiplinger, I learn things like what we've been talking about. I learn also about some news that Kiplinger's predicting about health care, Joan. You guys are predicting that Congress will okay the import of drugs.
Right, and I guess this is probably thanks to the election year pressure, because we're saying that they're going to do this because they fear voter wrath. I mean, people like being able, particularly senior citizens, like being able to go across the border, those that can do so easily, and get cheaper prescription drugs. And, you know, if there's a industry that's, you know, less well thought of than journalists or lawyers, it's probably drug companies right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that's unfortunate, too.
Do a lot of good.
They do. In fact, I heard of one the other day that's working on giving away a bunch of AIDS-related drugs. So I guess they need to spruce up their PR a little bit. But regardless, you know, especially people in the northern half of the United States, many of them live in states that join Canada where they can just drive right across the bridge there at Windsor, Ontario, for example, and north of Detroit and get Canada drugs a lot cheaper.
I guess what surprises me about this issue is that doesn't it really affect a very small percentage of the population? Because how many of us really can do that?
Right. No, you're right, but it's just knowing that they're cheaper and they're up there. It's just knowing that they're that close, you know.
Right.
And of course, if I live in Arizona and I know somebody in Michigan and they're getting their drugs cheaper, then that puts me 1 degree of separation away from cheaper drugs. And that makes me mad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that's kind of the way people feel about it. So, as you say, there's going to be a lot of pressure, isn't there, on Congress this year, and they're going to feel the pressure. So that's an interesting prediction that you guys are making. And the reason I say it's interesting is because this is a football that's been kicked around for a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, this has been going on for ages, and because the drug companies have been very upset about this and have been trying to get Congress to stop it and to clamp down on states that allow it, because their argument is that the quality of these drugs is inferior, and I don't know if that's correct or not, but I'm just throwing that out there, that's what they're saying.
Well, Another thing, Joan, that's going on with the drug issue is the development of drugs. You know, so many drugs are developed in the United States, and somebody has to pay for that.
Right.
And in some ways, I mean, I don't feel sorry for the drug companies. They do well, but I am concerned about the future development of new drugs. If we put too much pressure on the drug companies to, you know, they may not be as willing to spend money on R&D to develop drugs if they think it's going to take a lot longer to get their money back.
Right, and there's also the whole issue of development of drugs that may not benefit a large segment of the population, that may only benefit people with, you know, rather uncommon diseases.
But if you've got those diseases, it's a big deal to you, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yeah. Sure.
And those folks lobby Congress, too. Stand by, quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pryor, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We got more to come after this. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us. Let me remind you, we got Wayne Cruz is going to be with us coming up right away. We're going to talk about cyber terrorism. The next show, Michael Barrera is the SBA's ombudsman. We're going to talk about how regulations are affecting small businesses. And Dan Burris is our technology futurist on the Brain Trust. And so we're going to get him to tell us a little bit about how what he sees coming, what kind of products and services he sees coming at us from the future for our small business with regard to technology. And that's coming up in the show straight ahead. And then, Joan Pryor is with us, folks. And let's move on down and talk about some new stuff that's going on with financial services. There's some new, these new products for auto loans and mortgages. Tell us about that.
Well, this is interesting that we're saying that auto loans and mortgages are going to be marketed in a different way in the future. And in terms of auto loans, dealers have come up with this program that we're calling it a voluntary program, telling people that they can negotiate interest rates on the financing that the dealers themselves arrange, which to me that sounds very interesting.
Yeah, and the thing is, it sounds to me like it's a move in the direction to make financial services more of a commodity.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, sure.
So that's going to be interesting the more that happens. And the more we have access to financial services online, Joan, the more they will become commodities. And it'll be interesting to me to see how that changes the banking industry.
Boy, that should mean big changes, I would think.
Over the next 10 years, I would think.
That's right.
Because, see, Joan, think about this. Think about what happens when we actually can buy a car online. You know, all 50 states have laws that prevent you from being able to buy a car online now.
Right.
That won't stand forever. That will change eventually. And think about that. I mean, folks, I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying look for it and be prepared for it. Joe, let's move way on down and talk about, real quickly, you guys point out that folks, this is a budgeting issue, that the EPA is tightening up on mercury emission regulations for coal-fired electrical plants, and that increase in that regulation is going to increase the equipment costs for these utilities, these electrical producers, and that's probably going to increase our electrical rates. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, that's a tough issue because you've heard all the media reports about, you know, mercury in your tuna and mercury in your salmon and things like that. So something had to be done, but you're right. We're saying that these rules are coming in December, and with utilities upgrading their equipment to lower these emissions, that's where you're going to see your higher costs.
And how much is that going to be?
Well, we're saying that electricity prices will probably go up. We're saying no more than 3%. That's an interesting choice of words. So
right.
I guess we're saying it could be as high as 3%, but maybe a little less.
Well, the interesting thing is, though, Joan, is we'll probably have an increase in our bill before the mercury is kept out of the fish's mouth.
Well, yeah, it would seem to me that that's kind of a long term. It's going to take a while for that to sort of really seep into the ecosystem.
Absolutely.
You know?
So anyway, that's just a budgeting thing, folks. And that may not be a lot of May not be a lot of money, but it's just something to pay attention to if you start seeing increases in your electricity. Joan, let's move on over and talk about business surveys. Kiplinger is saying that, that people are saying that they're doing things that they may not be doing on these surveys?
Shocking, I know. but I think this was spawned by hiring projections, because what happens is, particularly with hiring projections, I think surveyors go to businesses and say, well, do you think you're going to be hiring more people or fewer?
We do two surveys like that on this show. We do a show, a survey with Tatum Partners and one with the NFIB every month on, for that very topic.
Right. And I guess the point we're making here is that they may feel optimistic when they're talking to the surveyor, but the next week maybe they're not.
Yeah.
And so that sometimes you're getting these overly rosy scenarios that are being published, and then everybody wonders why the numbers don't come in as expected.
Well, you know, the Joan, the only thing, and I don't want to sound like I'm taking issue with what Kiplinger is reporting here, except
you that, never would.
Except that the reports that we're getting, and we're getting them every month. And reporting them on the show here, I mean, I really feel that these people are telling us the truth. I mean, I think that they're, because we're not always getting rosy information.
Yeah.
So I think it may depend on who's asking the questions and, you know, and who they're asking the questions of. You know, maybe that's what it is. I'd be interested to see Kiplinger follow up with the NFIB report and the Tatum report to see if they still feel that way, maybe, you know, a year from now or so, something like that.
Yeah.
So for whatever that's worth, Joan, I got some bad news for you.
Uh oh.
I know how much you love jetting down to Barbados.
Yeah, as often as I can.
And Kiplinger's got some bad news for you, and I'm really sorry about this. Tell us about it.
Well, it's not too earth shaking, but what our point is that you're going to need your passport for a lot more travel outside the United States than you might have in the past. And I don't think that's really surprising to anybody, given September 11th.
Is that a Homeland Security, and I don't mean U.S. Homeland, I mean anybody's Homeland Security issue?
I think so, sure.
Yeah, it makes sense. And if you think about it, Joan, it's actually kind of a safety measure for all of us, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it.
I don't have a problem, you know, all the times that I jet down to Barbados, I don't have a problem flipping my passport out. Do you, Joan?
No, not a problem for me at all. Just a matter of remembering it.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. Well, yeah, and I know as often as you go there, you know, it's kind of a bother to have to dig your
passport. See, they know me now, so I'm really not going to need my passport.
Speaking of which, when we come back, we're going to talk about the possibility of zipping through the airports with a special kind of a designation. Stand by, 10 till. We'll be right back. Back, it's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our free newsletter. And don't forget Kiplinger's website, too, folks. Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. It's a good place. You'll like it. Joan, there's a new idea afoot to have what's called a registered traveler program. Tell us about that.
Well, this is kind of interesting, and I think people who travel fairly often are going to like this. The federal government is going to be testing this program starting in June, and it's voluntary. If you're willing to submit to a rather extensive background check and pay a fee, you'll get a special ID card, and that'll get you through the security lines of the airport a lot faster than the great unwashed. And let me tell you where it's going to be tested: Boston, Washington, D.C., West Palm Beach, which is kind of interesting, Knoxville, and Dallas.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is a good thing. It'll be
interesting. I think it's great because it's not mandatory. You don't have to do this. But if you want to do it, you know, no one's privacy will be invaded involuntarily.
Right. It's an opt-in program.
Right.
That's the operative word. It's opt-in. And,
yeah.
And I'm going to opt in as soon as I'm given an opportunity to.
Boy, you know, it's
So I'm looking forward to that being around a little bit more. Or maybe next time I go to D.C., they'll let me do it when I'm in D.C. I don't know about that. But
it's possible.
Okay, Joe, let's move over and talk about inventory. According to Kiplinger, inventory restocking is not going to add up to much in the economy. Now, here's a point to point out here, Joe, before I turn it over to you. the reason for one of the reasons one of the things that happened, I should say, in third quarter 2003 was we had about a $58 billion pull down of our inventory in third quarter nationally. They gave us the 8.2 or 8.3% growth in the third quarter, which was unprecedented, incredible period. And so we used a lot of our inventory. And so in years past, restocking that inventory would have given us a little bit of a shot in the arm economically. But because of just-in-time inventory practices, Joan, you guys report that that's not going to be that big a deal.
Right. And you may say, well, gee, that's too bad. But on the other hand, I think in the long term, it's better that companies stay lean and mean so that we don't have the problem we had. I guess it was back, what, two recessions ago in the early 90s?
Well,
when
actually,
people were...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was saying when people were sitting on way too much inventory, and that had sort of contributed to the lag in the economy.
Actually, that kind of a scenario hasn't happened since the early 80s, Joan.
Okay.
Because that's about the time that the just-in-time inventory in the 80s was when JIT really got its legs, but prior to that, in all the recessions that I'd been in prior to that, they were deeper and longer because many times the inventory buildups actually helped to create the recession and
exactly.
helped to prolong them.
Exactly.
The more we focus on JIT, Joan, the more we focus on just-in-time inventory practices. I believe that will go a long way, and I've asked economists this, noted economists, including some of the members of the Fed, Joan, if this practice could continue to not only shallow out the recessions we have, but maybe even prevent them from happening any sooner than, and they've all said yes.
Wow, that's huge.
So we, each one of us, Joan, small business owners and large business owners, because by practicing just-in-time inventory, we actually do our part in making the economy being fundamentally strong, don't we?
Yeah, that's very important.
It's very important. And so, yep. Folks, I really encourage you to do that. And this is evidence. I mean, we've got evidence of how valuable this is. And it's not only, Joan, it's not only valuable to the economy. If this is a critical efficiency fundamental for any business, for small businesses especially.
Oh, absolutely.
So focus on that a little bit, folks. Also, you guys reported that consumers are piling up debt. No big surprise there, right?
Well, those consumers, they're just amazing. They keep on going like an ever-ready battery or something.
But now, Joan, a lot of this debt is from household refinancing and second
and
mortgages where we refinanced, we got some cash, pulled some cash out, and because interest rates drops, maybe our cash flow on our house didn't even go up.
Well, that's the great point about this. If you're bringing down your interest rate and pulling a little cash out, you may not really be increasing your payment by too much. So this is really helping to fuel the economy right now.
But it also leads to, with the old everything has an opposite and equal and opposite reaction, the old gravity issue. It also leads to discussion about a possible housing bubble, too, right, Joan?
Oh, you're such a killjoy.
Yeah.
Mr. Glass half empty.
Well, make it half full before you go.
Well, they're going to talk about a bubble, but we still don't see it.
Thank you. I feel much better now, Joan.
Okay.
Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Thanks, Joan. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. She'll be back. I will be too, folks, but right now I gotta go. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.